Anna mentioned the children being an inheritance. I didn't even think of this psalm, but I do want to read that psalm because obviously this has meant a lot to Jeremiah and I, having so many kids. We have 9 children, and they are ages 17 down to 1, 1 and a half. So Psalm 127, verse 3-5, "Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. Happy is the man who has his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but shall speak with their enemies in the gate." I love that psalm. So I thought it would be kind of fun to think about some of the things you might not have thought about with large families. So who could guess how many diaper changes approximately to the nearest 1,000 that I've changed? Anyone have a guess? To the nearest 1,000, yes. How many I've changed, yes. I know, I have a massively ballpark figure.
Okay.
So I just want to, any ideas?
Oh, dang.
999,000.
No, not that much, thank God. Well, okay, I guess it's not fair because I used one. Okay, it's somewhere between 30 and 50,000. We go through about 10 gallons of milk a week. I have spent 6 full years of my life being pregnant. I've spent 2 full years, if you were to put it consecutive, 2 full years of my life being nauseous. And I've spent over 15 years nursing a baby and still going on that one. So those are kind of fun. Now, the most fun one is since my first child has been born, I've received over 70,000 hugs. And that absolutely makes it worth it. So anyways, that was a little blip about the kids. I'm going to just kind of go through my testimony from the time I was born. I want you guys to feel free, if you want to ask questions throughout, you're welcome to do that. So I felt like Psalm 84 describes my life pretty well. I feel like I've been on many, many journeys so far in my 40 years. So Psalm 84, starting with verse 1. "How lovely is your tabernacle, O Lord of hosts. My soul longs, yes, even faints for the courts of the Lord. My heart and my flesh cry out for the living God. Even the sparrow has found a home, and the swallow a nest for herself, where she may lay her young. Even your altars, O Lord of hosts, my King and my God. Blessed are those who dwell in your house. They will still be praising you. Selah. Blessed is the man whose strength is in you, whose heart is set on pilgrimage. As they pass through the valley of Baca or weeping, they make it a spring. The rain also covers it with pools. They go from strength to strength. Each one appears before God in Zion." And I feel like that person whose heart is set on pilgrimage, and that'll become more clear as I go through this. So let's rewind back to pre-1981. My parents had tried to have children, and my mom had several miscarriages. So they began fostering children, and they ended up adopting first my oldest sister, Stacy, when she was 4. And then some of you heard my dad talk about her testimony, which is fantastic. And they also adopted my brother and sister, Mark and Terry, who were biological brother and sister. And then my mom got pregnant with me. So they adopted, from the time they adopted Stacy till the time they had me, they ended up going from 0 to 4 in the space of like less than 3 years. So it was, you know, all at once, family. But it was very much a surprise that my mom was able to carry me full term. Her uterus, she had a disease in her uterus, and they had to sew it shut at 6 months because I was, you know, trying to be delivered, and she was on complete bed rest from 6 to 9 months, which was obviously very, very challenging for her. And then when I was born, after when my mom went back for her visit, the doctor said he had no idea how she was able to birth me. Her uterus was completely full of holes. Completely, you know, he just did not understand how it could have held a baby that long. So I was the last child. And I grew up in a Christian home. My dad was a pastor, went to a Christian school, had the huge blessing of having extended family be Christians, my grandparents, my aunts and uncles. I just grew up knowing, you know, this is who we are, knowing about the Lord. I had an awareness of God at a very young age, probably 4 or 5 years old. My earliest memories of praying to the Lord, and I didn't realize you only had to ask Jesus in your heart one time. I did it like every night before I went to bed, and Jesus, come into my heart. also had a big musical influence from the very young age. We grew up in a small church of about anywhere. I mean, sometimes we would have almost nobody in the pews. It was like our family and another family. And then at other times, the church had really grown to about 80 to 100 people. The church could only fit 100 people, and it was completely maxed out. So that was our little church we grew up in. My dad was the organist. My mom was the pianist, but sometimes that would change because they both played both instruments. And my mom taught us how to sing. We would harmonize and sing together. There was a time we would have a church string band, which was like a really kind of funny band. It was basically bring whatever instrument you play, and we're going to play together as a band. So we had banjos, guitars, we had a washboard. I had a pretty good sense of rhythm, so I was the drummer, and I played a snare drum and hi-hat. That was the only set we had, was those two things, so those were my instruments. And we would go to other churches and play, you know, different types of meetings, and it was a lot of fun. So I had that musical thing going on from an early age. I would consider myself an introvert with a huge sense of adventure. So because of that sense of adventure, it pushes me to do things that I'm not really comfortable doing a lot of times, like speaking in front of people. but I go after it because the Lord put that in me to go after him and the things that he has for me, even if it's, you know, something that I'm not naturally prone to. That sense of adventure was huge for me in, like, my favorite thing was our family vacations, whether it was camping or we would, you know, every year we would do something. We'd go to a beach vacation. We'd go down to Florida every year to visit my grandparents, and they'd take us out of school for winter break and extend it longer, so we'd come down and go to the beach. All that stuff. Those are really, really great memories that I have of my family. Also, theme parks. So my dad and I both loved theme parks, and that was, we would go and like go on the roller coasters together. And even when I was too short, I would stand on my tippy toes and see if they would let me in. So, fun times. So when I was 12 years old, my dad felt a call to minister in Florida. So we started coming down and visiting different churches that were looking for a pastor, and he found a church in Satellite Beach. When we moved there, I don't know what it was named before, but it was renamed Oceanside. It's still there today, a little church on Cassia down the street from Kingdom Gate. So they were looking for a pastor, and my dad was super excited to accept it, and so our whole family moved. I had only lived in one house until I was 12 years old, and we moved down to Florida. And for me, I was absolutely devastated. It was like the worst thing in the world. leaving my friends. I grew up in New Jersey, which was beautiful where I lived. We lived literally in the forest. Our driveway went up the side of a hill, and our house was completely enclosed, you know, by woods all around. And so moved to a postage stamp lot in Satellite Beach. I felt like I was moving to the middle of the desert. I was not happy. But that was the beginning of so many things, hard and good. I would call that, you know, probably the beginning of trials in my life. Really the first really hard things that I began to go through. And really, things did begin to fall apart with my family at that time. I went through a season of depression after moving. I went from New Jersey being in a Christian school with about 12 classmates to public school of 400 classmates and not believers. So the school transition was very, very challenging. And then, what else? So my parents, you know, most of you probably know, my parents ended up getting divorced a couple years later. But in that whole season of things going south in the family, the Lord started pulling me away from the conservative Christian background that I grew up in. We grew up in an evangelical free church up in New Jersey, which is, you know, kind of like a non-denominational conservative church. I went to a Baptist school, had never heard of the gifts of the Spirit or people using them in church. So when things started going south at home, the Lord, in that same time, so my brother Mark made a really good friend that went to Freedom Christian Center. His name was Frank. And my brother invited me to come one time with him to youth group. So I went and I met Jacqueline Zermanio and some other girls there who were just filled with the Spirit, loved the Lord, joy on their faces. And it was unlike anything I had ever experienced before in church. Now, I always loved the Lord. I would pray and this and that, but the way that they experienced the Lord and the relationship they had was so different than what I had been used to. And there was a little fear there, too. You know, Freedom Christian Center, Sunday mornings, you know, would get pretty wild sometimes, and sometimes I would be like, what is this? This is terrifying. You know, is there something wrong with these people? Are they demon-possessed? You know, what is going on here? It was all brand new for me, you know, but I just kept coming back because I wanted more. I wanted more of that. So my parents ended up divorcing when I was 14, and my mom moved away. She moved to Georgia, and, you know, there was this decision then, you know, I was very close to both of my parents. Do I move to Georgia with my mom? Do I stay in Florida with my dad? And I was torn, absolutely torn. It was probably, you know, up to that point for sure, the worst thing that I'd ever gone through, having to feel that pull of what to do. So at the time, I was very much involved with High Calling Youth Group, both at Freedom Christian Center and here, which used to be New Covenant at the time. Tony and Rachel became, you know, spiritual parents to me. Ted Travers was a spiritual dad to me. God put so many amazing men and women of God in my life to help me through that time. So many of you know Ted Travers is, you know, very to the point, prophetic guy. So he knew the struggle that I was going through, and he had me and my dad come over and basically told me that the Lord showed him that you are not supposed to leave Florida. You know, he put you here. This is where you're growing. This is where you're supposed to be. And if you move and go live with your mom, you're going to be in disobedience to the Lord, which was extremely hard, but what I needed to hear, because the pressure was so strong to do that. I mean, my whole life would have been completely different. Wouldn't be sitting here today if that had happened, if I had left. So made that choice to stay in Florida, and I continued to grow in the gifts of the Spirit. I prayed for the baptism of the Holy Spirit with Tony, Rachel, and the youth group up in at Brandy's old church up in Poughkeepsie, and there's a couple mission trips we did there. Before that, I went to Guatemala. The Lord just did so much in my life during those years. What else? Okay, so I was a pretty close friend and like a little sister to Stuart Greaves. He kind of took me in as well, and just was a mentor in my life at that time. And when I was probably 17 or 18, he and Esther had already moved out to IHOP, and he invited a friend of mine and I to come out for a weekend. And he kept telling me all the time, you need to do an internship. So came out for a weekend and got to see what IHOP was about, and I did feel like God was calling me to do that. So came back, raised money, and joined the internship in 2001. It was a 10-month internship, And of course, that's where I met Jeremiah, who was on staff there at the time. And it was our heart for worship and our connection to Israel that made, you know, really drew us together. He heard me pray on the mic one time for Israel. It was an intercession meeting, and he had been asked to start a prayer meeting that was totally focused on Israel. So when he heard me pray, he came up to me afterwards and invited me to be on his worship team to specifically intercede for Israel. So I was super excited for multiple reasons. I already had my eye on him for a while. So we got to know each other really well during that year, during that internship. And at the end of 2002, we began dating. And he asked me to stay in Kansas City. And he had these plans, and Mike Bickle had told him, you know, you and Laura get married, and we're going to have several internships next year, and you guys can lead one of them. So he thought, this is awesome. This is the plan. And he told me, and I was kind of excited about it, but a little hesitant. And I was like, okay, yeah, I mean, that sounds awesome. This sounds great. And then the Lord, you know, shortly after, convicted me, probably the heaviest conviction, even to this day, that I've ever felt. It was like the burning terror of the Lord, knowing that I will be in direct disobedience if I stay in Kansas City and don't come back to Florida. It's like, I have plans for you in Florida. You cannot stay. And I knew it. So I had to tell him, and I was heartbroken because I figured, you know, he's never going to want to come to Florida. You know, he has everything here. You know, he was on like everybody's best worship team because he's such a fantastic electric guitar player, and he was just kind of, you know, had his vision on staying there long term. So I told him I have to go back home, and he was really devastated. And then it took about a week or two, and God started working on his heart, and he started, you know, hearing from the Lord telling him, you know, why do you assume that she's supposed to stay here with you? What if I have a call for you in Florida too? And he was actually really open to it. And so he came, you know, told me about it. And of course, I was excited. So he followed me to Florida. We moved, let's see, so that internship ended in 2002. I moved back home, and he moved down to Florida. He got work, got an apartment, and we were dating and ended up getting engaged in December of 2002, and then married in May of 2003. So, okay, next chapter, I need to drink. Hold on. Any questions? All right, moving on. Okay, so we got married, and we both had it in our hearts that someday we would be missionaries to Israel. We both, you know, he had already been on one missions trip to Israel, and we both just really wanted to do that. We figured it would be down the road sometime. However, it was shortly after Ezra was born. So Ezra was born in the spring of 2004. We felt the Lord stirring our hearts, like, I want you to get ready to go to Israel now. I don't want you to wait 10 years down the road. So we started really praying about that. And when we told the pastors and elders at our father's house, they were very supportive, you know, and we all kind of made a plan that we would, our goal was in that, I think it was January of 2006, was going to be our goal date of setting out for there. And then, so we started raising money. This was, you know, getting into the spring of 2005. Now, Avner, I was pregnant with Avner. And anyways, the Lord, we started feeling stirring, like, no, I want you to go even sooner. So, and everyone was like, well, yeah, I mean, that's great if God brings in the money, you know. Can't just fly there without the money. So we went on this tour for fundraising, and the Lord did it. He brought in everything we needed to end up leaving 6 months earlier than we were supposed to leave. So Avner was born, I might be getting some of my dates wrong, but Avner was born in November of 2005. Oh, that's right. We were going to leave like a year later. We ended up leaving when he was about 8 months old, the summer of 2006. We moved to Israel. And Jeremiah was studying Hebrew and studying archaeology and different things at Tel Aviv University. And we were part of the local church in the city where we lived, which was Modi'in. So we connected, and we didn't know a soul out there when we went. We weren't part of a missions group. It was really cool. The one person we knew, the Lord just did all of these strings to connect us in ways that were pretty neat. Jeremiah had gone out to an IHOP conference, I don't know, maybe a year or two before we moved to Israel, and met a girl from Israel. She was a believer, and she said, and Jared had told her, you know, my wife and I want to move to Israel someday. And she's like, oh, well, I have to get you in touch with my sister Tayla. She, you know, is someone who makes connections happen and all this. So we emailed her sister, and her sister got really excited. We told her the Lord's called us to Israel. She said, oh, I'm going to help you out. Well, she found us an apartment, found us, like, furnished the home, found us appliances. I mean, she was unbelievable, this woman, and she ended up being one of my very best friends when we moved there. And I consider her still to this day, even though it's, you know, I haven't seen her in so many years. But she just, God used her so much to just set us up there in Israel. And we were part of her church, and we were part of a home group, and Jeremiah was able to do ministry on campus there. So we were there for about 2 years. There was a break in between when we came home to have Daniel, and then we went back for another year. So so we were there for 2006, seven. So Daniel was born in July of 2007. Then we went back in January, and we're there for another year. So 2009. Many of you remember in 2008, recession started hitting America really big, and our funding just kind of fell out. So we were, and the Lord, you know, gave Jeremiah a dream, spoke to him, and said, you know, yeah, because we were really upset at first, like, oh my goodness, we've only been here 2 years. Are we really supposed to go home already? And God did confirm to Jeremiah that, yes, it is time to come home. You know, it was a short mission, but it's time to go home. So we came back and plugged in at our father's house, and Jeremiah was on staff. He was a worship and youth pastor, and young adult pastor. During this time, and even a few years before, the Lord really started speaking to me in dreams. This would end up being, you know, a huge theme, one of the biggest ways God speaks to me. So I think this was probably right before Ezra was born, somewhere around there, right after. I had one particular dream that the Lord gave me that was really intense. One of those encounters where it's like more than a dream. I don't know if any of you had that, where like you know that the Lord is with you, speaking to you, and it almost feels like it's really happening. And in this dream, I was a priest in a cave. And it was like ancient times, it felt like. And there were three of us, and I was, you know, like this actual, what you would expect to see in Leviticus, you know, an old man with a beard and robes. There's three of us, and I was one of these priests. I don't know why. It was bizarre. But I wake up inside of this cave, and there's two other priests that are sleeping. I wake up, and I come out of the cave, and there's an angel standing there, and he points this way that leads out of the cave and off into the desert, like the wilderness. And I knew that he was telling me, it's, you know, you're going into the wilderness. And at the end of the wilderness, there's a gate. And I saw the gate, and he called the gate Mokan. So then I saw him again, and I looked back in the cave, and I hadn't noticed it before, but I saw the Ark of the Covenant, and the Ark of the Covenant was in the cave with us, but it was like it was dead. I saw the cherubim and the box, and everything was dark. There was no color to it. It was like dusty, you know, like I had been sitting there for an eternity. And right after he had told me that go through the wilderness and go through the gate, I looked back at it again, and I saw the cherubim begin to move like they were waking up. And it was terrifying. Like the good terrifying, but I woke up just with that feeling, you know, like what was that? But really, really intense. So I bring that of many, many, many dreams I've had. That one I wanted to bring out because this is the dream that is so exciting about us coming back to Melbourne, fast forward, you know, till present time. Because when Jer and I were in Haines City, which was the city that we lived in before this one, I went to the One Thing conference, the very last One Thing conference at IHOP in December 2018. And when I was at that conference, the Lord told me, you know, it's time to go back to Melbourne. And he reminded me of that dream, and he said, the gate is Mokan. Kansas City's nickname is Mokan because it sits on the Kansas City, or on the Missouri and Kansas border. The city is literally, half of it's in Kansas and half of it's in Missouri. So they nickname it Mokan. And that the Lord showed me, it was a marker. This is the gate, and your wilderness season is over, and it's time to go back to Melbourne. So that was, and I had, you know, so I had the dream in 2004. A lot of times dreams take a long time to come to pass, 2004 to 2021. Anyway, so let me rewind again real quick. So we were at our father's house after we came back from Israel, and the Lord gave me that wilderness. So go back to going into the wilderness. The Lord had given me that dream, you know, maybe a year or two before this time when we came back and we were ministering at our father's house. And circumstances happened at our father's house where we knew we had to leave. And the Lord, and it was really, really heartbreaking. Because we had all these visions and felt this destiny of, but we came from Kansas City and we want to help start a house of prayer here. And we want to do an internship and all, you know, in Melbourne and Brevard County, we want to be part of what God's doing here. And instead of all of that happening, things kind of fell apart at our father's house, major transition there. And we ended up moving to North Carolina. I had to live with my mom for a while. Again, because of the recession and how bad things were economically, we lost our house in Florida, in Melbourne. We had to short sale our house. Jeremiah didn't have work. So we ended up moving to North Carolina so that we could kind of stay afloat with my mom for a little while Jeremiah looked for work. And he started taking classes at Full Sail online. He felt like the Lord was telling him to do that. So he began being a full-time student online. He was working for my stepdad, Bill, up in North Carolina. And then he got a job on the west coast of Florida, over in near Tampa, a little north of Tampa. So we begin this kind of bizarre part of our lives. And all this time, I wasn't really thinking about the dream, like, oh yeah, this is the wilderness. We just got to go through it, you know? It was like, it's always like, what is going on, Lord? You know, like you took our ministry away. You know, and obviously you think the Lord does this. It's not the Lord that does these things. He allows these things to happen, but we don't have ministry. We're not by our church family. You know, now God gave him a job in a mega church that was not charismatic, that it was a seeker-friendly church. And everyone there had like one or two kids. And at that time, we had just had number five. So we get there and we are like bizarre to everybody. Like every time we walked in that church, people would literally like just stare at us with the stroller. They're like, and all the time, like, how do you have so many kids? You know, like five kids was literally unheard of at that church. It felt so strange. And it was so different. And I was like, Lord, like, where's the living water? I know these people, you know. I don't know. It was just not what I wanted. but you know, God had us there, so we were there. You know, over in that side of the state for a few years. Jeremiah had graduated with a degree in cinematography and turned into a great, you know, videographer guy, and he was doing their video segments that they would play during their worship services and all that. But we ended up making some really excellent friends over there. His boss ended up being one of his closest friends, and his wife was just amazing. They had real heart for the Lord. What next? Okay, after that, Full Sail, when Jeremiah graduated, he was working for the church while he was going to school. When he graduated, Full Sail invited him to come and work for them. So another transition. All in all, we've moved, I think, over 20 times. It's kind of like a military family. That's why I said Psalm 84, this whose heart, you know, is set on pilgrimage, you know. Lord, what do you want? What do you want? What do you want? Well, he's, for us, he's had us move all over the place. So we left the West Coast and moved to Orlando, and Jeremiah began working at Full Sail University. Some awesome things about being Orlando were, had this really cool dream. I think most of you probably heard this, but I know there's some of you that weren't here when I spoke on a Sunday morning one time. I told the story about Judah when he was born. The night before he was born, this was 3 weeks before he was due, and the night before he was born, I had this dream. Well, it was actually early in the morning, and it was a scary dream. I had this white, kind of like clearish white snake kept wanting to crawl under my shirt and curl up on my belly, and I would grab it and push it away and get it off of me, and it kept wanting to come again and again and again. And finally, I woke up, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so glad that was just a dream. Like, get that thing away from me. And I, you know, got out of bed, and my water broke. And now he's number six, and my water has never broken, had never broken until birth with the other five. So I was like, oh, wow, this is really weird. 3 weeks early, my water breaks. Okay, this is a different scenario. So we go to the birth center, and, you know, he was born later on that afternoon, early evening. And when he was born, the umbilical cord was wrapped around his neck three times.
Whoa.
And it was, you know, not very tight because he was early. It was 3 weeks early, and it had not obstructed his airways at all. And the Lord showed me, I wanted you to see the enemy's plan for your son, and I wanted you to know that I got it covered, and I'm taking care of him. So that was a pretty awesome dream. Going back, one other dream that I wanted to highlight too. So this was after, I think it was after Daniel was born. We had three kids, and we were just praying. You know, we didn't know how many kids we wanted to have at that time, and I thought, you know, probably four, you know, sounds good. And it would be nice to have a girl. So I was just praying about it, and I get this dream. It's kind of a bizarre dream. You know how dreams can be really weird, but in this one, I go to a shopping mall, and I see a friend of mine, and she has this little tiny baby leopard that she's holding. And I said, oh my goodness, it's so cute. Where did you get that? And she said, oh, I got it at the pet store. But, you know, the pet store is downstairs, but you're going to have to hurry because they're closing soon. And so I ran downstairs, and there's a pet store, and he's getting literally starting to close up. You know how they have the bars that close over the store in the mall? So he's starting to close those doors, and I look at him and say, wait, you know, I wanted to come in the pet store. And he's looking at me like smiling, and he said, well, you know, we're already closed. But the look on his face was like, test me, try me in this. Like, you know, I kind of knew, like, oh, this is probably Jesus. And so I went in anyways, and there were all of these little baby leopards, but they had already grown up. You know, they were like, you know, walking around on the floor now. They weren't these tiny little kittens anymore. And Jeremiah was with me in this part, and I was looking at them and I was saying, oh, how can I ever choose? They're just all so adorable. And then all of a sudden the dream shifts, and I'm in a big home, and it's the leopards are gone. It's not leopards. There's children, and there's many children in the home. And I turn to Jeremiah and I say, you know, we can't just pick one of them. We have to take all of them. We have to. And then I saw a big, beautiful yard, and the kids were just playing out on the yard. And I woke up and I knew the Lord was asking me, you know, are you willing? Are you willing to take all the children that I have for you? So, yeah, of course I was willing, even though it was hard. You know, a lot of people think, you know, oh, you have a big family and, you know, that's for you. But it's not an easy choice. you know, sometimes I think, well, we'd only had three, we'd be doing our vacations with just the two of us all and traveling the world and this and that. But, you know, and I, you know, we always joke about it because that's so empty compared for us, compared to what God did have for us with all of our amazing kids. And each one of them have special names. The Lord gave us the names of all of our kids, and they're either Hebrew or biblical names, or you know, names that would have a special spiritual meaning to us. Okay. So Full Sail, Jeremiah worked for them for a few years, and then he got a great opportunity to work at a private school over in Haines City in Central Florida. And it was a great increase in pay for the family, you know, because with such a big family, even though he had a decent job, pretty good job at Full Sail, you know, things were always very tight. We're always, you know, believing in faith, you know, all the bills would be met. So he got this job over in Haines City, which paid really well for our size family, like actually didn't have to worry, like shift things around. Okay, well, you know, pay this bill this week and then we can pay this bill. He actually was like, okay, we can, you know, this is good. This is a great job for our family. We can pay the bills. And he was commuting from Orlando for a year, an hour and 20-minute drive. So after doing that for a year, we ended up moving closer to where he worked, moving to Haines City. And in that time in Orlando, we were coming over here to church with my dad, and we were wondering, like, God, is this it? Is now the time that you're going to start, we're going to do ministry in Brevard County, and are we going to get to do the things you put in our heart? And we started this little church with my dad, and it was only a 45-minute drive because we lived all the way in East Orlando. And it was a great time together, but nothing happened, you know, as far as it didn't go anywhere that we thought it was going to go. And then he ended up getting the job in Haines City, and so we're like, oh, now we're moving further away from Melbourne. You know, we're so close. We were in the West Coast. We made it to Orlando, and now we're going back. So we, you know, went back to Haines City, and you know, Melbourne was totally off of the grid again. We ended up joining a little church down the street from where we lived, and had some really great times there. I helped with worship there. You know. Charismatic type of church, but like I said, so we moved over there in 2017, and then it was the winter of 2018 where the Lord told me, you know, it's time to start, you know, praying into going back to Melbourne. I'm going to open those doors for you. So while we had been in Orlando, Jeremiah had started taking Krav Maga, self-defense, taught by instructors there, and absolutely loved it. He went 3 days a week. He started progressing through the levels. Like, he was super excited about it. He did really, really well. He started, after being in it, he was there the whole time we lived in Orlando, which was 3 years, and then even when we went to Haines City for the first year, he was driving an hour and a half to get to his Krav classes after work, and he was an assistant instructing. Well, the Lord told him to put it down. So after we moved there in 2017, it was the spring of 2018. So for 2018, all the way, almost the whole year, God told him he wanted him to give it up. And it was heartbreaking for him. Like, he really loved it, but he knew that God was telling him, you know, you need to stop. So he stopped, and we started just seeking the Lord. God brought Jeremiah and I into a season of prayer. There was just a grace for it that we had not felt before. And we were praying every morning and getting up early before the kids got up. So probably in the fall, let's see, it's really hard to remember exact times and dates and all of that. So 2017. Okay, so I got the word in 2018 about going back to Melbourne. Okay, I know what it was. So Jeremiah hadn't been doing Krav for a while when I got that word, and a little shortly before I got that word and went to IHOP, we had been... Randy, when did we start driving over?
The summer of 19.
Was it 2019?
Yeah, June. You came to our house
yeah.
in June. And
okay.
Coming back.
Oh, yeah.
And we okay. thought it was just for the summer.
I
yeah.
think it meant starting for... Because you were coming for dance, too.
Right. We're driving over for dance. Yeah. Okay, so 2018.
That was always.
Yeah, so coming into 2019, that's right. Yeah, Jared wasn't doing Krav himself at that point. Got it. He had picked it back up. Okay, so we felt like the Lord telling us, you know, it's time to start praying and going to Melbourne. And then that spring, he told us it's time to get out of the little church you're in. You need to be single-minded. So we did that. And we started drive. It was summertime. That's right. So yeah, because he didn't work in the summer being a school teacher. So we said, well, since we're not, you know, doing, he's not commuting during the week, why don't we start going to Church on the Rock on Sundays? We'll just bring the family. It's like an hour and 35-minute drive, but we're like spiritually, like we need something. Our kids need something. So we started driving over once a week and loved it. The kids started just really, you know, making friends. They really didn't have good, like, friendships. In Haines City, it was just a family time. Like, we literally did not make any connections there spiritually. Like, we went to this little church for a while, but it just wasn't there, you know. It was, you know, he was there for work, and that was pretty much it. So we started coming to the Church on the Rock, started getting connected, and then in the fall, so summer 2019, fall of 2019, we started talking about Krav, and the Lord kind of stirred up Jeremiah's heart, like, you know, it's time to pick this back up again. And Becky and Brett Stebbins were like, you should start, you know, teaching the families. You should start doing this at Church on the Rock. And so Jared was like, well, yeah, maybe I'll do that. So he started on Sundays. He started giving free classes for self-defense once a week after church on Sundays. And so we connected with the Stebbins with their unit that they were running for their business, and we shared it. And then it started growing. And more and more people were coming, and the Lord told Jeremiah, I want you to quit your teaching job and do this full time. And there was no money coming in from Krav whatsoever when Jeremiah was told that from the Lord. Like, we would, you know, there would be donations coming in, which would cover our gas, which was fantastic. And different things. We were able to buy some, you know, equipment that we needed or whatever, but it was definitely not something that could support a family of 12. My father-in-law lives with us, so with the 9 kids, you know, we're a party of 12. So we did that for a long time. We were commuting, you know, to church every Sunday, and then even when Jeremiah went back to work at All Saints, we were commuting. He was going to work every day, and we were still commuting on the weekends. So, spring of 2020, it was coming up to the point where he was going to have to sign back on. So, at where he worked, he would sign the papers in March saying whether or not you were going to renew your contract for August. So, we were coming up on that deadline, and, you know, Jeremiah knew the Lord had told him, you need to quit your job and do Krav full time. And we were just praying, like those prayers where you're just like, God, are you really saying this? Please confirm this, because we are not going to have an income, you know, as soon as he signs this paper, unless you do a miracle. And he just felt it so strongly. So he signed the paper. He told them, I'm not coming back. Turned it in. And they were like, okay, God, you have this many months to do something. and the way his paycheck worked, he would get paid through the summer. And then, you know, starting in August, that was it. So by this time, so he finished up the semester at school, 2020 in May. And immediately he dove in. He opened up classes first 3 days a week for Krav over here in Melbourne. And then eventually to 4 days a week. And he was driving over here 4 days a week. He resumed his Krav training in Orlando for himself to keep himself up to date on everything. So, and then we were coming to church on Sundays. So 6 days a week, he was driving over an hour and a half one way to do the things that he was doing. And the kids and I, you know, the kids started helping him with Krav, so they were driving too. I started coming over more. So as a family, we became this crazy road warrior family since last summer, really. And then in the fall, the Lord stirred up the March family. We had talked, you know, for years with them. They had wanted to do something with us ministry-wise for years in Melbourne. But the Lord spoke to them and said, I want you to help them in the Krav business. So they came and said, we want to help you guys. And Leanne took on the role of office manager and really helped the business really get on the ground as, you know, a legitimate business. And it, you know, it grew very, very slowly. It did not, by the time fall started, the income wasn't there that we needed, that had been lost. But God provided supernaturally. Every month something else, something different would come in. It was literally one of those things where, oh, wow, we got a check from this family we haven't heard of from in a few years. Heard what you guys are doing. We want to sow into it. You know, a random check from a family member. You know, all these things started happening. Every month something happened where, okay, you know, I don't know how you did it, God, but we paid all the bills this month. And it has been that way, you know, supernatural provision from that time that we started doing it full time. So the Lord told us last fall, you know, also, you know, you're going to have to put your house on the market. Of course, we can't keep living in Haines City and doing this three-hour commute every day. So we put our house on the market last, I don't know, winter, spring. And then it was like, okay, now we need to find a place to live. And does anyone know what the market was doing? You could not bought, purchase a home contingent on the sale of your home, because the, you know, houses have been flying off like hotcakes now with COVID and everything. Everyone wants to come to Florida. So put our house on the market and quickly realized, okay, nobody will accept our offer on a house. We put in, you know, many offers. We tried to. The offer never actually got to be put in because our answer was consistently, no, we already have 5 to 10 other offers and they're not contingent on a sale of a house. So we came to the realization, okay, we have to sell our house completely before we can even start the process of looking. And then it's like, okay, where does a family of 12 go when your house is sold and you don't have the next house purchased? You know, short-term rentals, $6,000 a month for those first, that would fit our size family. Okay, well, do we split up into church family and we'll just live in 4 or 5 different places, you know? So this is kind of an interesting, you know, solution that the Lord did. The Lord laid it on a believer's heart that someone we did not even know. He felt like the Lord was telling him, I want you to sell your house to the Gondas. And I want you to move out immediately so they can move in. So we connected with them and we were very excited and we felt like, oh, this is, you know, this is probably our next house. Which it didn't end up being our long-term house, but it absolutely provided a short-term place for us to live. So, and this dear couple, they quickly packed up and moved out of their house in 1 week's time so that we would not have to be floating around after we sold our house. It was really, really awesome. And it was only like 5 days transition, and we had another dear friend give us points from a hotel and put our entire family up in a hotel for those 5 days. And so we moved into this transitional house. This was a few months ago, I guess in April. Yeah, we sold our house in April, moved into this other house, and then, you know, realized through a series of events that this isn't the home that God promised us. You know, the Lord had spoken to us many things about the home that we were going to live in when God started telling us, you're moving to Melbourne. We knew it was going to be a bigger home and a bigger yard than what we had for the kids. We were praying, God, we need a great place for the kids. And this home didn't embody that, you know. So there was a sense of disappointment. We thought, oh, wow, we're really glad this worked out. But, man, God, this is kind of not what we felt you were giving us, you know. So then when we realized, like, no, you need to keep looking, it was such a huge sense of relief, you know. Of course, the moving multiple times has been extremely challenging, but absolutely worth it. So a couple months ago, we found the house that we, you know, actually was in our price range, and it was bigger, and the yard was bigger, and totally fit our needs better. So we purchased that home in July, and moved in like a month ago, and I finally brought us up to date. I'm sorry, it's pretty long. So now we're in this home off of Malabar Road, and it's on a double lot. It's totally shaded. The kids have a fantastic place to play. So I'm going to read one more scripture. And this was the one that God kept giving me over and over and over again, relating to the destiny he had for our family and the inheritance in the home. It was the Isaiah 54 passage, which I love so much. Enlarge the place of your tent, verse 2, and let them stretch out the curtains of your dwellings. Do not spare, lengthen your cords, and strengthen your stakes. For you shall expand to the right and to the left, and your descendants will inherit the nations and make the desolate cities inhabited. Do not fear, for you will not be ashamed, neither be disgraced, for you will not be put to shame. For you will forget the shame of your youth and will not remember the reproach of your widowhood anymore. For your Maker is your husband, the Lord of hosts is his name, and your Redeemer is the Holy One of Israel. He is called the God of the whole earth. So this house is a natural representation of the Lord finally bringing us back into our destiny of what he has put in our hearts to do since we were married, and the calling and destiny that we thought we were going to run into, you know, when we first moved to Melbourne, to Brevard County, and we had to go through, you know, that long, over 10-year wilderness period. So coming back in this year is exciting for us on so many different levels, so many different levels. It was a major, major battle to get here, and I'm just, you know, it's funny because when Anna asked me to speak, like, what, a year ago, was it? You were filling in these slots. I was, you know, I thought about taking one of the ones in the spring or summer. I was like, oh, yeah, we'll be transitioned by then. I was like, nah, I'm just going to pick the furthest one down because by then everything will have already happened. and then, you know, after that, I was like, oh, my goodness, this is taking forever, this transition, forever. But I actually am on the other side of it, barely. So here we are.